I'm on a mission to help high flyers just like yourself, who until now have let the fear of public speaking hold them back from making a bigger impact. Join me as I find out the secret sauce from the world's leading speakers to make your speeches more interesting, enjoyable to give, and impactful for your audience. That's the mission, and this podcast will get you there. My name's Victor Ahipeni, and this is the Public Speaking Secrets Podcast.
Speaker Nation, welcome to another episode of Public Speaking Secrets. I'm your host, Victor Ahipeni. Super excited to have you on today with our guest, Kieran Kinesius, who is the CEO and co-founder of three different businesses that's all based off the back of her levels of areas of expertise. But we're going to find out a little bit about the businesses, but also how she's been able to get on stages and position herself as that expert and authority within her space. So welcome to the show, Kieran.
Thank you very much, Victor. It's lovely to be here.
So give us all a bit of a background about, like a quick background about you, what it is your companies do, and what is exactly that, your background, and then what you do these days.
Yep. So my name is indeed Kieran Kinesius. I'm American, but have been living in the Netherlands for more than half my life now. So all of my higher education and work years have been here in Europe. I founded initially Zeus Consulting with my best friend because we wanted to help fix a problem within outsourcing within the pharmaceutical industry. And over the last few years, we've founded additional companies. We're now part of a larger collective management consulting company that focuses on growth and change within life science companies. So it could be pharma, it could be medical device, biotech, or all of the suppliers that we have here. And we focus on helping them build a sustainable business, which doesn't have to only do with the sales or commercial success, but also has to do with the people, the processes, and infrastructure that you need to have to be able to survive the downs of entrepreneurship and building businesses in order to be able to ride the waves of up in the next stages. So we work together with companies on their HR and recruitment, as well as so recruiting and making sure they have the infrastructure and process needed. We work on them with the outsourcing and procurement, so which suppliers do you need to be successful? Furthermore, with them on their marketing and their sales development, and finally on training and technology. So within those four pillars, we help companies to be successful and sustainable for the long run, and then all in life sciences.
Nice. And I mean, you're obviously thought of as one of the all your companies as well as the go-tos, the experts within that industry. Organizations come to you, they see, hey, I need to grow, I need to get some stability, I need to get some of my life potentially back as well. I see, say, public speaking as a big trust builder within, when you're getting up in front of these organizations. And obviously, particularly in the pharmaceutical industry, being able to, it's a competitive landscape. Like, it's a multi-billion-dollar landscape that you're working in with, and people are all trying to get that competitive advantage, find people that they know, like, and trust. I guess like any industry, but from when you first started out, how has public speaking, obviously we're here to hear a bit about that, how has that helped with your business? Has it been a big growth factor, or has it been something that you've, it's one of your pillars in the regards to marketing and for your own business?
Yes. So to all of those questions, yes. So I love being on stage. It's poured into me from my childhood. My mother had her own ballet school and was a ballerina prior to that. So since I've been 3 years old, I have been on stage and watching that creative process. And in my university years, I was actually singing in a band. That's where I met my husband, who was the guitarist.
It's always the guitarist that gets the kills.
It's been a place where I'm comfortable and where I have always gotten energy from, is to give the audience something back for the fact that they pay attention to me on stage. And I think that that's, yes, it's been a definite factor of our growth. We're only 6.5 years old, so I still see a big, big chunk to win as our company in terms of being the go-to. We are still one of the go-to, but to our current clients and those we've worked with for the last 6.5 years, some of them, being on stage definitely impacts their trust in what we're talking about. It allows us, it gives us a podium to give opinions and challenge the status quo of what is happening in our industry. And it's a really, I think it's a really powerful way to connect with the audience members, those who are in the audience that actually believe in what you are saying or want help because they want to achieve what you're trying to bring across. I hate presentations that are about sales. I think they are boring to listen to. But I 100% stand behind the belief that everyone, even if their goal is to sell something, they have something to teach an audience. There's something that they know that not everyone else knows. So it's not just a duty, but it's actually a powerful tool to use to share that knowledge from whichever seat you sit, to give an audience member or the whole audience something that they didn't know before, that they know when they walk out of the room. And it gives you as a founder or it gives you as a speaker the potential to be identified by those audience members who actually see they need a change, see they need help with change, and want to talk about it with you. Our business, a lot of our new clients that were not actually from our current network, came from conferences, came from speaking engagements that we did. And it's not that we had 100 leads come from 1,000 populated, an audience populated by 1,000 people. But it has given us those critical leads, the companies that are right now urgently trying to do something differently. They feel connected with your story. And they are the ones that you can spend your energy on because you have a moment of recognition while you don't have to call those 1,000 audience members. You get the 5 come to you because you resonated with them. So there definitely is crucial to have a message and to think about what can I show this audience that they wouldn't know, because, and from my perspective, where I sit, I think, yeah, it's fun to do, which is how I feel about it. But we as a company have 100% prioritized that in our marketing budget, in our plans, and hence coming to you is also part of our drive to ensure that our voice and our opinions are heard by our industry.
Cool. And going back to something that you said, like having that message. So, I mean, I couldn't agree more with everything you said. It's like a brilliant marketing funnel. Like you can jump up for 30, 60, 90 minutes in front of 1,000 people versus having to have a sales team doing, you know, discovery calls with 1,000 people, which, plus the outreach and getting them and sourcing them to find those 5 awesome clients that, you know, a perfect fit for your business. I know it's probably slightly different and, you know, depending where you are speaking, but what is it with your message? What's the message that you try and convey that is the light switch? Like, you know, when you step up onto stage, is it, you know, giving the creator that ability to be able to scale and have a framework to doing that? Like, is there a particular message that you want to go get across so it ticks the box for your ideal client when you're, you know, preparing or organizing a speech, or is it vary each time you talk?
Well, it does vary. I think that one of the things that we as a company, actually two things we as a company believe in, and I as an individual within this company believe in. One is we challenge the status quo or the way things are done with our presentations. So we don't just show this is the process and this is how we've always done it and this is how to best efficiently do that process, but by being honest and truthful and really taking a step back, we challenge the current process by saying you need to understand A, that this is this solution, this way we've been doing it is not fixing our problem. So let's recognize that. Two, let's talk about what is actually human interaction that is affecting this. And three, we always talk about practical case studies, actual examples, sorry. So we talk about actual examples. And I think that that's what I see a lot of speakers end up doing, is they talk in theory, which is great for an audience and does motivate. But we can do that from YouTube. We can do that from home. We can read books. And our industry is very much focused on highly educated people. So, and humans in general, if they have a problem, they go look for information. The power of the internet is that we are able to get information from everywhere and also reputable sources. So it's not about giving the theory. It's about putting the theory in context of the practice and what, and actually challenging an audience not to do it the standard way. So challenging the assumptions and the standard practices and status quo is something that we as a company are very focused on, because it's not, don't do things so you don't get fired. Do things so that they're effective. I think that that's a message that we see, whether we're talking about diversity and leadership, whether we're talking about HR technology, whether we're talking about selecting suppliers. We bring it down to the core of the problem and actually identify whether the process we have to fix this problem is actually doing anything good, or is it actually exacerbating. And secondly is the human piece. At the end of the day, when we're sitting in an audience, the most powerful presentations, the most powerful speakers are human, show emotion, show impact, show the impact of others. And I think that that is, even the most technical stories, I want to, as an audience member, believe that the speaker actually either feels passionate about it or has gone through the struggles. So secondly, showing as a speaker the human side of what you're doing, it's critical, because it's the emotional hook. It's not the fake story you put at the beginning. It's the actual emotion you feel about this problem. And showing that is I think, a really powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And it's powerful for your audience to remember you, because I think one of the amazing things about speaking is that it also plants seeds that you aren't aware they went there. So you see the four people that come up to you at the end of a presentation, and you see that as your return on investment for that speaking slot. But there are, if there's an audience of 80, there's 96 other people, of which maybe 20 think you're telling garbage, or the 20 other ones were only reading their email. But there's therefore at least 50, or 56 to be exact, who actually thought about what you've said. And they may not come to you right away, but they may come to you in 6 months or a year, because they remember you. The emotional impact, that impacts the length of time that they remember you. So it's challenging status quo. And bringing in the human emotional side of things. I think that that really characterizes myself and everyone within our company speaking in front of audiences.
Yeah, I think that's like, you said you're speaking to high intellect individuals in the audience, but the point that you brought up about the emotion, like they all might be high intellect, but they're all have emotions as well. Yeah, they're all human. They've all got emotions. And you know, part of, I think, an effective presentation, an effective narrative, is controlling that narrative. So you can, you know, take a case study of so-and-so who was here and here, and they can feel those emotions, those ones out there who are going, oh, that was me, or that is me, that's where I want to be. And it's rather than telling them the facts of like, if you do this, it's like, if this is done, here's what happens to a person like you. And I mean, there's a guy I follow, Russell Brunson, and he talks about the epiphany bridge, which you said exactly that. It's the, this is the old way, here's the new way. And then they have, you bridge that epiphany with case studies, or you bridge that epiphany with emotions to go, ooh, the old way was stupid. The logical way is, you know, to work with you know, your team, or to work with you, or whatever it may be. So I think super valuable points for anyone when constructing. Yeah, it doesn't matter what kind of presentation, really. If you take those things into consideration, it doesn't matter if it's a eulogy, let alone anything else. With regard to getting on stage, so you're in a particular industry where you obviously want to get in front of particular people. What did that look like when you were first getting started to try and, you know, get your message onto a stage potentially what it is now and what it looks like going forward? Are there certain tips or strategies that you've used that you think might be beneficial? Obviously, is it a work in progress and changing as you go?
In general, I believe that the speed at which you do that has to do with the amount of cash that you can put behind it. So you can buy speaking slots. So if you have access to a lot of cash and you want to reach a large audience, you have something to tell. It doesn't. And when I say that, I don't mean you have to have life-changing things to tell. It can be almost something so specific that is really interesting for a specific audience. That's also something critical to tell. If you can solve someone's problem by you presenting, then hallelujah, get on stage. But a budget will determine the length of time it takes in order for you to be able to get your message out. So easy, cheap ways to do that is, of course, blogging. Go using online sources that you do not have to pay for to get in front of and to approach speakers. Our industry in the pharmaceutical industry, life sciences, we are all categorized in either supplier or sponsor. So supplier are those that make money at conferences, and sponsors are those who are there to learn and potentially to spend money on those suppliers. So because we are categorized as a supplier, as a consulting company, we are always assumed to be one of the companies that are going to pay. And that's for us a challenge because we are self-funded. We are in a 100% female board team. So there are five management team members. And we have no investors. And we have that for conscious reasons. We wanted to remain with the ship, the steer in our hands, without having to report or bend to someone else's wishes for our company. That also results in ensuring that we have a positive cash flow every year because we need to pay everyone's salaries. So we went about this in two ways. In one way, using our own network and working together with those who are on speaking boards or in conference organizers, and ensuring that they knew that we had something to talk about, ensuring that every presentation we took very seriously and doing very well so that the conference organizers also get a very positive reaction to your session, because they are organizing a conference to have people want to come back next year. They don't want to come back next year if the sessions are bad. So if you give them a good session, you're a value to a conference organizer. But it's not easy, I must admit. We choose a few that we pay to go to every year, and every year that becomes one less at the moment because we are invited to actually speak. But for a lot of conferences, we need to pay to stand on stage. And even when we do that, we 100% always do not talk about our services or what we can offer. We talk about a topic that is interesting to that audience, specifically to that audience. And we do things like ensuring that the title is exactly what we are going to talk about during the presentation, because that's also a frustration of audience members. But it's not. I would say that if we want it to be easy, you need to choose something that you are, that's a hot topic, and that people trust you very quickly to be a to be an expert. Otherwise, it is a long road, and it takes a lot of dedication and keep going because. Even if you are an excellent speaker, depending on the company you work for, it's not always logical that you get invited to speak. You have to be visible to the people who are choosing. You have to be have a reputation of being a good speaker. So if you have the money up front, invest in standing on stage, not just having an exhibition stand. That's, a lot of times we invest in speaking and do not have a stand anywhere. Because you are valued differently by the audience if you've been brought in as an expert rather than brought in as a supplier. But get on stage, find ways, talk to conference organizers. What you can do as well is to contact conferences and promote yourself as a last minute speaker. Everyone is always really busy. Conference organizers' nightmare is the day before the conference or 2 days before the conference. A speaker calls up and says, I'm sick. Or do you remember the ash cloud we had? A lot of speakers couldn't fly around. So make sure you are on the emergency list of conferences that you know you can bring value to. So identify those conferences, make sure the conference organizers know you, and make sure they understand what it is you can talk about. And we have generated interest in areas of outsourcing and outsourcing relations. So clinical trials, a lot of services are outsourced. So we are seen as one of the experts in that area. So we are working together with different conferences because we would like to be speaking to that audience. And others, when they don't know us, sometimes we pay to be on stage, but we do not sell. We teach the audience something that we know and we think would be valuable to them. That was a really long answer. Have a lot of money, have a lot of patience, and want to put in the hard work. That's really the quick one.
and I think both of them require the hard work too. Yeah, you've still got to work on, I love what you, I think that's something I haven't heard anyone else who's been on the show talk about, is that last minute speaker opportunity, which makes total sense because, I've had an email, hey, can you speak at this, 3 days in advance. Yeah, we had you on this short list because I knew the organizer and it was like, hey, we really need you to do this. And I don't know why it didn't cross my mind that often happens a lot. Different things happen.
I don't know if it happens a lot, but if you have, let's say, 4 conferences or 10 conferences per year on a global scale that are 100% in your area, ensuring that you are known and are willing to come in last minute and have a presentation ready and can solve crucial issues which these conference organizers have, then it's a way that you get in. And then the next year, if you do a good job, that's crucial that you do a good job, the next year you are asked potentially to give input in the topics for the conference, and potentially you're asked to speak. And that's how that works, I believe.
Yeah, and I think they're not selling from stage. I mean, it's not an industry where you can sit there and it's a digital course where you can have a table rush at the back and be like, $997 today only, run to the back. People would rather get value. I mean, I worked with one of my students, Josh, and we did the same thing, was what to look for if you are a dental owner when looking for a social media marketer. And obviously that's what his company does. And we gave the 3 tips and case studies. And by the end of it, they got a ton of value. They realized they didn't want to do it themselves. And they realized that there was an awesome option for them at the start of it. There was no like, come to see me if you want to do this. I mean, he had a lineup of people going, hey, that was awesome. Seems like you know everything that I need. For that person, why would we not use you as the logical option? So I think they're not selling, educating, solving the problem, and you're the logical choice. Yeah, hopefully you're the logical choice when people are making it.
And if you're not, be happy with that.
Yeah.
Because if you are very clear, so you have made clear what the issues are within your expertise area, and you have had an emotional impact, and there is no one that comes to you, be happy that you didn't have to spend the time finding that individually. And yes, follow up. I mean, follow up is a major thing. But really focus on giving people value for the time they spent listening to you. Because that's their gift to you, is you got their attention for 15 minutes, for 20 minutes, or a half hour, an hour, or 90 minutes. Make sure you're giving something back, and not that you're just asking for more, because it's annoying as an audience member. And the worst thing to do is to get on stage and annoy your audience.
And we've all been there. We've all been on that side of it. So often we forget, we talk about it in marketing. It's like the person who proposes on the first date, like, don't be that person, because you don't like it when you're getting marketed to, like, hey, buy my stuff. Hey, use my services. It's like, provide that value, build some rapport, get some trust. And then if you're the right fit, and it's so much better because you're working with people that you actually want to work with, you're not doing the flip side. And just, this has got not too much, a little bit to do with public speaking, but I'm interested to know, when you said that you're a bootstrapped, which I think is awesome, but you've got, was it 5 females on your board or 5 females in your team, you said. Do you utilize that as one of like your unique selling points when you're on stage? Like, is it something that you highlight, or do you just sell your business as your business? Do you end up, just out of interest?
Well, actually, we are with 25, and no, they're not all women.
Yeah.
And no, we don't actually spend a lot. We don't focus on that as one of our USPs, because it just is. And I don't see it as, it's not diverse, which I don't see as a good thing. It's how it organically happened. And we have like-minded individuals who within their expertise area were growing businesses, and we decided that it made a lot of sense to collect that power and to work together. So no, it's not one of the things we focus on. I think that it is one of the things that makes us internally unique, because I don't believe we have a typical, what the assumption is about all female boards is not true for our board. And I don't actually want to spend a lot of time focusing on it because it just is. Yeah. And there's a downside to that fact as well. There's an upside and we use that as much as we can, but there's definitely a downside because we do not have a diverse board in terms of gender. And I don't think that that's a good thing or something to be particularly proud of. Am I proud of what we've built and what we are continuing to build? 100%. And if someone wants to talk to me about that specifically, because we are all women and how we do that, sure. We were participating in a PhD research about successful female founders. And what are those components that have given them success and what do they do differently? So yes, we look at it because I think it's interesting, but not one of the things that we focus on making us unique.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't think you would. I was more just wondering if you did that result in the audience that you appealed to, you know, did you find that more females had come to you or anything like that? But obviously that's not the point. I mean, it sounds like
certain things. So we have one of our businesses is focused on recruitment and our brand was built by us and is therefore female. It's executive recruitment. So if you think about all of the executive recruitment companies, you know, whatever industry, they have a very male brand, also run by men, very dark blue, very powerful brands. It made sense because it felt comfortable for all of the male boards and CEOs out there. Mm. So our recruitment brand and our brands in general, yes, 100% they have a female shroom because we had to fall in love with them as well. We created them, so logically they were going to be more female oriented. And yes, we do attract more female candidates on an executive level for our recruitment jobs because that's what we wanted to do. And because we have a better understanding, I believe, because we come from a similar sandbox. However, that's not true for the other businesses. It's almost not relevant for our consulting business. So for one of them, yes, but for most of them, no. We go about things by looking, there's a problem, we look out of the box, what can we be doing differently? We're honest, we're transparent, we're extremely direct. And it's about getting things done.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a female or a male thing. That's just us.
It's a solving problems in an efficient manner, which it doesn't matter what business you're from. You're going to appreciate it, whether it's a male delivering it, a female delivering it. You just want a business that's going to be beneficial for your problem, which I think it sounds like you guys and girls are doing in spades to do it. And I mean, I really appreciate the insight into, I've had a lot of different speakers on here or business owners and speakers who use the stage to generate their business. And it's awesome to get the insight from a different industry. You know, I've had the personal development and the coaching space, which is, it's pretty much occasionally you pay to be on stage, but a lot of the time it's, you speak for free and then you split your fee 50-50 with what you sell with the event organizer, and it's a whole different dynamic. So I think it's going to be a lot of the lessons that you've given are applicable to everyone, but really going to be beneficial to those people who are experts in their space in a professional world looking to use speaking to leverage it. So I really appreciate that, and I want to just say thanks for sharing all of that.
Thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to connecting again soon.
If people want to check out you, find out more about your awesome businesses, where can they go and what can they do?
They can go to our website. It's www.consultzeus.com. So Zeus as in the child storybook writer, Dr. Zeus, and not Zeus as in the male god. So consultzeus.com. And we're actually going through a rebranding ourselves right now, so that website will be updated in the next few months.
Cool. Well, we'll link all of that at publicspeakingblueprint.com, where it will have all the show notes, everything we talked about, plus the links to all of everything we've spoken about. And you can also pick up a free copy of my book if you just want to cover the shipping. I will cover the book at publicspeakingblueprint.com. So thank you so much again for all your time, your input, and there's some massive gems that I've taken out of it, and I'm sure many others have.
Thank you very much.
If you want to fast track your confidence and impact with public speaking, then be sure to jump over to publicspeakingblueprint.com, where there's an array of free resources to help you no matter where you are on your journey to becoming a more powerful speaker. And while you're at it, jump over to Facebook and join our free community called Speaker Nation, where there's a ton of other like-minded individuals just like yourself looking to level up. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode.